Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by this morning. Well, I am very disappointed and a little bit worried about a friend of mine who was going to speak on the show this morning. I heard from her actually right after the show yesterday. She's been struggling with a bout of pneumonia and thought everything was okay. And I guess night before last, they aren't really sure what happened. She's still having tests and everything, but she's been hospitalized. And I hope to be able to check on her today and make sure everything is okay. But I got kind of wrapped up in the story that we were going to talk about. So I decided to go ahead and do the story and have the show. And when my friend is better, she will come on the show and we will, rehash and get her point of view and see what the issues are that are going on with her. And that is the fact that so many of us are looking for Prince Charming or Princess Fiona to make our lives perfect, to fulfill us in some way. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's not the way it works. And if you're looking for that, you need to look a little bit closer to home. So let's talk about this. Because this is, in all the years that I have listened, counseled, supported different people, men and women, not just women, this is an issue because we grow up thinking that when we find that perfect person, they will make everything perfect. How would you like it if somebody had those expectations about you? Because this is a two-sided street, right? If that's what you're looking for, that's what they're looking for, too. So we got to talk about this, because this is not the way it works, people. And there is a much easier, albeit maybe not as much fun, but a much easier way to make yourself happy. I just brought in Shell. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Renee.
How you doing, honey?
Doing pretty good. Yeah, I have a bit of a flu again myself, so there's something, this is like the third time I've had it in the last 2 months. It doesn't last long with me because of the stuff I do, but the fact that it's happened 3 times in under 2 months is, once we came back from that seminar we went to, there were some people in the room that were kind of like coughing and complaining they had a headache. And 2 days later, now I'm kind of having the same symptoms they were having, you know. So I send out good thoughts to your friend and all that. Pneumonia obviously is a lot worse, but the point I'm making is that there's a lot of stuff in the ether. It's that time of year. A lot of people from other climates are coming to Florida because it's a little bit more comfortable here. As cool as it is to us, it's a lot better than other parts of the country and the world. So we kind of get an influx of a lot of people from other climates that kind of bring non-local stuff down here. And people, if their immune system is challenged in any way whatsoever, they're gonna be affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other thing that happens this time of year is when our climate changes. It's not so drastic at this point in time, but what is happening is there is a very hardy breeze outside almost every day now. And one of the other things we have to remember is that puts all kinds of stuff in the air, not just the pollen, the obvious stuff, but it also puts lots of other stuff. And if, like you say, if you have some immune issues or some sensitivity issues or any of those things, my oldest son never, he's the only kid out of all four of them who never had any kind of allergies. And he was outside working in the yard 2 days ago and came in both eyes, just like somebody poked him in the eye, red and itchy and watery. And I said,
well, you could develop allergies at any time in life.
And that's what it looked like. So
for your friend, though, who's in the hospital.
Well, and you know, probably that's another thing. And, of course, we've talked about this before, so we won't talk about it today. But depending on what kind of insurance you have, the hospitals often don't keep you long enough. And a lot of times it's you. Lots of times it's you saying, I got to get the hell out of here. So you push for it, and they're okay with it. So, but when you have something going on like that, you do have to be in a safe place. And I know everybody hates hospitals. I get that. I've spent more time in them than I care to even think about. Not in a bed, but sitting beside somebody, and it's not a nice place to spend your days at. So, but I loved what she brought up because I know that it's an issue. And as I said, through the years, counseling different people, talking about what's going on with them, having not just young women either, men, middle-aged people. I spent at one point in time at the Institute, we had a woman that stayed with us as a health educator. And this was her thing. This is what was dragging her down to the dreads of despair, because she couldn't find Prince Charming. And it's really sad, because the fairy tales, I think, support this for us, and that's okay, but you have to be able to tell fact from fiction. And the truth of the matter is, there isn't anybody. There really isn't. There are people that can bring you some happiness. There are people that can share some happiness with you. There are people that you can laugh with, enjoy their company. There are people that you can certainly fall in love with and hold what they believe in and what they find dear close to your own heart because you love them. But there is nobody, and there is no magic pill or elixir that completes you except you. And until you get that, until you understand that you have to be the one that makes Renee okay, there's nobody else that's going to be able to come along and do it for me. So Shelley and I have, I mentioned this person the other day, a guy struggling, quite a catch from the opinion of an older woman, good, good-hearted, good-looking, good job, good background, all the things that any mother looks for their daughter, let's say. And he was pursued constantly. And he just, you know, he'd look at somebody at face value and think, oh, this is the one, and then get to know them and be like, oh, she gets mad because I work too much. She gets mad because I believe in this. She gets mad because she can't do what, you know, what I believe we should do. And I'm like, just calm down, back off, let that run its course. And when it's right, you'll know it. And his story is almost like a fairy tale. And it did happen. And for all intents and purposes, of course, I don't have a microphone in their bedroom or anything, but I would say that they're pretty happy. So, but this guy and this girl spent a lot of time working on themselves. They spent a lot of time in finding out what brought them calmness, what brought them happiness, all the things that are important for us to find out about ourselves. In all the self-help books, Shelley, that you've read in your lifetime, Is that or is that not one of the most important facets of a self-help book? That, hence the name, self-help. Not somebody else help me. Not somebody else make me happy. Not somebody else ride in on a big white steed and sweep me off my feet and I don't have anything to worry about. Sometimes that doesn't even make you happy, as sad as that sounds. Sometimes that's not even the answer. The biggest fulfillment we get is from ourselves, right?
Exactly. It has to start. You have to be okay with who you are. It has to start from there. If you have issues with yourself, if you have insecurities, first of all, insecurities is where jealous comes from, okay? And maybe that's why I really don't ever entertain that. I'm secure enough in who I am that if somebody I'm with cheats on me, which has happened, it upsets me, but it doesn't destroy me. I'm like, well, what a fool this person is to have me in their life and jeopardize that for something on the side that he say isn't meaningful to him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's where my head goes, where a lot of people that are in a relationship and they find out that their significant other is cheating on them, it diminishes who they are to themselves. It makes them, it destroys them. Instead of making them upset with the individual who's cheating on them, it somehow diminishes them, and the only way they can feel better is if something happens. They either retaliate against this person or they win them back over or something like that. And neither situation is needed. You just have to be comfortable enough with who you are and okay enough with who you are, and you will attract people that will complement that, those emotions. You and I both know a couple that have been married for 28 years. never any jealousy there. They're constantly around other men and women. She's always doing things. You know, they're therapists, so they're always around other people, men and women. Both very good-looking people, very worldly, both very intelligent. And yet they've never gone through that jealousy mode. And they're both very strong personalities, which is an interesting thing. A lot of people think that strong personalities can't be together, you know, because you'd have to have one that's strong and one that's a follower, and that's actually not true. In a true marriage, you really want to match personalities, where if you have somebody who's strong, that person should be matched with somebody who's equally strong, because they end up complementing each other, and they really become a life team. This couple that I'm talking about are best friends. They've been best friends the entire time. They've had to do things apart from each other, sometimes for weeks at a time. The man in this relationship actually went away for 3 weeks on a business trip a couple years ago. They talked every day on the phone, but neither one of them felt insecure. There was no jealousy. There was no worry, oh, what's going to happen while I'm gone, or what's going to happen while he's away. And it's because these people are very, very self-confident. They like who they are. You can see when they talk, they're teachers, very good at what they do, very compassionate. They don't have the kind of thoughts like, well, I'm better than everybody else. So they're the type of person I was talking about the other day, is that you don't want to go too far in either direction. You don't want to have so many insecurities that you're a nervous snot all the time, and you don't want to be so overly confident that you tend to put yourself on a pedestal above other people. This particular couple are good because they're a good balance. They feel good about themselves on an individual basis, and as a team, as a marriage, as a couple, they complement. They don't both have the same strength. They know what their own personal, I don't like calling them weaknesses, what non-strengths are, and they recognize that strength in the other person, and it completes them by complementing them, not completing them by making them happy. And I think that's a big difference, and that's where people go wrong. You want to look for somebody that complements who you are but doesn't complete you in a way that when they're not around, you're less of a person somehow. You're a whole person. You're the whole package. And it's really important for people to start recognizing they're their whole package. And now they're looking for somebody that's going to complement their strengths and weaknesses, and kind of where they're weaker or where they don't have some strengths, the other person does. But that even with all their foibles, and everybody has strengths and weaknesses, but in that you're your whole package, and that's where people have to change their mindset.
Well, a lot of that comes with what's happened to you in your life, and I want to give that a little bit of credence as well, because I don't want to say to everybody, you know, step up to the plate, and it's about, I mean, I do say that, I just said it a few minutes ago, it's all about you and how you trust yourself, how you believe in yourself, your own personal fulfillment. And yet, I realize that there are some people who are a little bit running on empty, and that has a lot to do with what's happened in their lives, the kind of things that have, you know, occurred, the treatment from others, and sometimes that stems from way, way, way back in the very beginning, your parents, how they treat you, all those kind of things. So a lot of times somebody is looking for another caregiver, one that really loves them. I mean, I've had this said to me. I want, you know, I've heard all the stories, abuse, even sexual abuse by parents. I've heard so many stories that sometimes I wonder if we'll ever get to a place where the secrets that some people hold are not their demise. And I think emptying that that hurt energy is a good thing, is a good start for those of you who are struggling because of the way you were treated or things that happened to you as a small child. But again, you're not going to find somebody who walks up to you who appears to be perfect. Everything you like about somebody, they can't fix that either. And they'll want to. If they love you, they'll want to. I want to for some people. I try for some people to talk and say, this is, you know, this will be okay. You just have to do this and you just have to do that. But no matter how much I try, I can't fix them. And nobody can really do that for me. I've had many aha moments in my 66 years, many aha moments. And by that I mean waking up one day and deciding this isn't working for me, and I waited for so-and-so to help me with this, or I waited for, you know, this to happen to me and that to happen to me, and it's not happening. Well, what I realized probably in my 30s, was that if I really wanted something to happen, I had to make it happen. And I couldn't wait for somebody else to come along and do it for me. No matter how much I cared about them and no matter how much they cared about me, that didn't have anything to do with it. What has to do with it is you're just the only one. And as scary as that may sound to some people, because I'm sure it is to some people, it's also incredibly empowering. And once you realize that you're not dependent, that you're not waiting for someone else to do something for you and make your life what you think it should be, that is an incredible feeling. Incredible.
Yes, it is.
You feel like somebody just untied both your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, because at one time during my marriage with Charlie, now Charlie and I met, we fell in love the night that we met. So I know that love at first sight does exist because we fell madly in love the night we met each other. Charlie had a lot of emotional baggage from a very abusive childhood, which I didn't know about, and which he didn't recognize as playing into our relationship. So our marriage, although it was definitely sparked by love, was very tumultuous, and at times I suffered. And there were times where, like you said, I depended on him too much to make things right. I was so upset with him because of some of the nonsense he put me through that then I kind of like stood my ground expecting him to make things better, and he just didn't have the capacity. I mean, so I can look back there now being in a better place, but at that time, I was looking for him to make me feel better about our relationship and about me, and there was a time that I did allow it to affect me as far as, you know, like, why can't I help him? Why isn't he turning around? And that was one of the first times that I, although I didn't realize it at the time, that I realized you can't make somebody else better. They have to do it for themselves. I couldn't have been kinder. And, you know, and I told you, Charlie and I met again after 25 years, and he actually said that to me. He said, you couldn't have been more supportive. You couldn't have been kinder to me. And it took 2 years after we divorced for me to go back and realize who you were. And he says, and then it was too late. He said, I had already ruined the relationship, you know. But it was nice that at some point he recognized that. But while I was going through it, it did diminish me. So this isn't the way I feel now. It wasn't the way I always felt during my life. A lot of that has come through seeking that and having a little bit of a stronger self-esteem than a lot of people. But where I am now is from, like you said before, I do read a lot of books. I look towards things that make me feel better. There are true stories and movies of people that have triumphed either in relationships or challenges. And when I expose myself to certain types of books that talk about strengthening your self-confidence, strengthening who you think are, strengthening your talents, and strengthening your talents doesn't mean you have to go to school, by the way. There's other ways of doing them. There's books that talk about that. And when I started exposing myself to these books that are self-help in you dealing with you, I noticed a major shift over about a two-year period of time. So I deal with things differently now. And like I said, I started with a base where I already had a very strong self-esteem. My sister did not. My sister was really treated very, very poorly by our father. And when you talk about things, like, he would say very derogatory things to her. He would call her stupid. He would call her, you know, he would tear her down. So my sister did grow up with a far less strengthened self-esteem over me. But she's even now benefited from some of these same books. I've introduced them to her. So here later on in life, she's also benefiting greatly from the same books that I did, even though she started in a much different place. So the point I'm making is that it doesn't matter if you have a little bit of a self-esteem, a very strong self-esteem, or no self-esteem. These books can reach you if you're of a mindset to start making a shift in yourself, to become happier, and then to attract somebody that complements you, doesn't complete you.
Right. Well, that's the trick. You know, an interesting pretty much fact, I don't know if there's statistics on this, but I know from my own personal life and stories that I have been told, it's not unusual to have somebody meet, fall in love, get married, and it's miserable. And they divorce, often amicably, and they become best friends. Best friends. You know why that is?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Uh-huh. That's because they quit relying on the other person and take a whole lot of stress off of each other because they're no longer expected to be that fulfillment, and they just get to like each other, care about each other. I have a lot. I have some family members even that as divorced people, they were inseparable, and looked out for each other and everything, but they could not be married because the responsibility of the marriage from what the other partner would lay on them was too much for them, too much for
right.
them.
Right.
So that teaches us a lesson in itself, right? That shows
That's
us
right.
exactly what we're saying is, you know, has some major validity. Now, what about when you meet somebody in the very beginning and you're just starting a relationship? I mean, I hear all these things. Oh, I like people who make me laugh. Well, not if you're pissed off, you don't. So that's not going to be a selling point all the time. Oh, I like people who show lots of attention to me And I like to be, you know, wooed and romanced. Not if you want alone time, you're not. Then it's going to annoy you. So who
exactly.
do you really have to get to know better? Yourself. Again,
you have to know
yourself.
Yep.
What's really going to keep you happy or what's going to be kind of nice for an hour and a half and then bug off, buddy, you're driving me nuts, right?
That's right.
You know, and it's funny how some people start off thinking that, oh, my God, how beautiful that would be if I had a significant other, be it the husband or the wife, who wants to, you know, be with me every minute and just cares about, you know, what I want for dinner or where we're going to go or what movie we're going to see or what kind of car we're going to drive. And then as your life progresses, how you're going to treat this kid, how you're going to reprimand your children, what you're going to believe in as far as religion and politics and all those kind of things. Let me tell you something. There's a lot to be said for individuality. If we
that's
were
right.
meant to be Siamese twins, that's how we'd have all been born. Right? It's not
that's right.
about that. It's about your personal individuality. And if you can't make yourself happy, how can you expect somebody else to? So I found...
Well, the answer to that is you can't.
Exactly. Exactly. You absolutely cannot. You have to be able to... First of all, if you can't make yourself happy, then you really don't know what does make you happy, do you?
That's right.
If you
And when
can't
you talk about some... Without, you know, without getting, like, too esoteric or anything like that. But when you talk about energy, we've always talked about, you know, people that don't accept that. Everybody has experienced this. You walk into a room and there's that one person there that's so negative that they don't even have to speak to you. You stand next to them and all of a sudden you just want to get away. There's just something that puts you off about them, you know. And we've all had that happen with individuals. That there's either that person that everybody tries to avoid because you just don't like the way you feel when you get close to them. And then there's other people that just the expression on their face, the energy they're putting off, they tend to draw people to them. And again, this is without even speaking yet. It's because of the energy they're putting off. Well, when you're insecure, think about this now. Think about how energy works. Okay, because whether you accept it or not, it's there, it's real, we're always vibing in one direction or another. If you are insecure and you're putting out that insecurity, which is an uncomfortable feeling, don't you think people are then going to feel discomfort when they're near your energy? I mean, it's just simplistically that. So if you're trying to attract people, you want to be putting out at least comfort and okay so that people feel comfortable and okay when they're near your energy. And it's a very overly simplified way of putting it, but it gives you a good idea of what I'm talking about. I know people who are very kind and very sweet, but extremely insecure, and it's difficult to be near them because their energy is so dense. It's hard to be near them. And there's nothing wrong in their behavior. It's the energy they're putting off. Because they're so insecure, they're looking for approval from people, so they have this dense energy around them, and you stand next to them for 2 minutes and you feel drained. You ever heard of people like that? You know, walk in the room and say, oh, my God, they just sucked the life out of me and they didn't even speak to me. That's what's happening. So if you can understand that the energy you're putting out is either going to attract or repel people, that even describes it more. You don't even have to speak half the time. And you will either be drawing people close to you or repelling them based on how you feel about yourself. It starts with how you feel about yourself. You can't get people to love you if you don't love yourself. All right? And again, I'm not talking about it in a conceited way, but loving yourself in an appreciative way. You are blessed with life regardless of what religious beliefs you have. The bottom line is we are blessed with a life. We're blessed with a body. You know, there's a lot to be thankful for. And then we allow our lives to unfold the best way they can, you know. But when you feel good about that, when you feel good about who you are, you don't have that pushback energy with people. If you have that sense of neediness, That's very, very draining, and people are going to get exhausted when they're in your presence. Even if you're being kind and nice, it doesn't mean you have to be a nasty person, but that neediness is draining, and people feel you trying to get something from them, and it's exhausting. You actually are stealing other people's energy when you allow your own to become depleted. So that's another reason why it's a good idea to read some of these self-help books, get a better feeling about yourself, get a little self-confidence. All these books do is take experiences that you have, they put a bunch of examples, and they just help you look at them in a different light so that you start shifting your own attitude towards yourself into more confidence. You know, there's nothing ever earth-shattering in these books. All it does is shift your perception a little bit and start letting you see that you really do have more talents than you may believe, that you're smarter than you may believe, that you're more of something than you may believe, and it just helps you to come into that very comfortably. So I really, really highly recommend those type of books.
Well, I've always, when I give a pep talk to anybody who's struggling with those kind of things, who's struggling with who they are, not just that, but, you know, why do I struggle to have this, and why is this an issue for me when everybody else seems to be handling it just beautifully? Because, you know, a lot of times people make an assessment by outside appearances. And I think one of the other important things to remember is not that, I don't want everybody to think that everybody's putting on a facade, because I don't think that's true either. But to some degree, it is. When you assess your friends, some of us are great actresses and actors as well. So it can't be about what you see in somebody else. It has to be more about what you see in yourself. So
that's right.
When making an assessment of someone else's behavior and why do they have this, and why are they always surrounded with people? Why do they always seem so happy? Why do they do this? Well, there could be a myriad of reasons, and one of them could just simply be because they know how to make everybody believe that they're okay. I don't think any of us are built to be ecstatically happy every minute of every day. There is a downtime, and there is a time for you to revel in your own sorrow every now and then so that you can get rid of it. Ignoring things and pretending that they don't exist is not the answer either. And a lot of people who put on a really good front, case in point, Robin Williams, case in point, other comedians and actors that we talked about on the show after Robin took his own life. These people made us all believe that they had the world right by the tuchus, didn't they? And here they were, struggling. Now it's come to light that Robin was suffering from a couple other, aside from Parkinson's, he had another disease that I never heard of. It's a weird name, and I wished I'd written it down, but I didn't. I will look again to find out what it was. But they talked about it on the Today Show, and of course I saw it in my research on the computer the last 2 days. After they did the autopsy, there was no alcohol, no drugs in Robin Williams' body. He just was scared, would be my guess. That's my own assumption. Nobody told me that. And thought that he was going to be a burden, probably. So he took his own life. Then we have the other young man who survived spinal meningitis at age 16, lost his hands and half of both legs at age 16, and now at age 30, out of what appears to be the blue, takes the life of both of his parents, shoots them. I mean, shoots the hell out of them, if you will, and then runs away and ends up taking his own life. So things are not always what they seem. So if you're judging, the point I'm trying to make is if you're judging your own happiness by the outward happiness of others, sometimes they're struggling too. and to, you know, harbor any kind of resentment because they seem to be able to deal with everything and you can't, also hurts you. Goes against your own healing.
That's why I was saying yesterday that that's how I was raised, that there's always going to be people better off than you. There's always going to be people far, far worse off than you. And the bottom line is it really is important for people to look at how their life is unfolding and just do the best with it. And if you can, wherever you can make improvements, make those improvements. We should never stop making improvements in our lives ever. I forgot one of the quotes we had heard this weekend. It was very, very powerful. It was by a woman. I don't know if it was Oprah Winfrey or it was some female who's iconic like Oprah Winfrey, but I don't think she was the one who said it. And basically the person said that you never stop improving until the day you die, because the minute you stop looking at ways to better yourself, you're actually going backwards. And I've always felt that. And I shouldn't say always. I started feeling that in my 40s when I overcame my own health issues myself and started taking responsibility for what was going on and basically took back my power, didn't relinquish it to men in white coats anymore. I went through a very dramatic emotional shift in my 40s. I already had some self-confidence, but there were times I was very low during my health battle because doctors were just so freaking clueless or antagonistic. If they gave me a pill and it didn't work, they got angry with me. Like, I can control how my body responds to this medicine you just gave me. So I was actually treated kind of abusively by some of the doctors. So I was on an emotional roller coaster along with my physical recovery. So in my 40s, when I, like I said, took back my own power, and that's really when this whole self-help thing started with me, first with health, but then through my journey, I also started learning about how our mind affects our health. It plays into relationships also, okay? Our thought patterns, what we believe about ourselves, what we allow ourselves to believe about others can absolutely impact our health. If you're always pointing fingers at people and you're just a very angry and judgmental person, there's a good likelihood at some point you're going to have some health issues from that because it's just not a healthy way to be. But it's also, if you're constantly self-critical to the point, it's good to be self-critical to drive yourself. But if you're self-critical in a way that tears yourself down, then now you're looking for other people to make you feel better about yourself, never going to happen. That is never going to happen. People are not going to make you feel better about yourself. That has to start from within yourself. And then people will agree with you. They will say, wow, you did a wonderful presentation because you had the self-confidence to get out there, or you wrote a wonderful paper, or you have a wonderful idea, you know. And people are going to respond to your level of, hey, what I just put out there is really good. Don't you agree? And people won't agree in a phony way. They're going to agree because it really was something good, and your energy is making other people recognize that. So it really is important to take your own power back about your own happiness, and then you will attract people who will, like, compound your interest in an analogy format, all right? People will come in and take that sense that you have about yourself and make it even more. They'll increase it, but they can't put it there if it doesn't already exist. It's like trying to get interest from a bank without making a deposit. It's not going to happen. You got to have money there first, okay? It's the same thing here. You have to have some level of confidence first, some level of self-love first, then you can get more of it from other people. But if you're completely void of it, you're not going to get it from others. It just can't happen.
Well, and I think like we talked about yesterday, we talked about coveting other people's lives, other people's material, other people's ability to appear to be well-adjusted. If you do that, then you don't build yourself, you diminish yourself. When you always look at somebody else and think that their life is so much better than yours, you're working on a major diminishing project, because if you're comparing yourself to somebody that appears for all intensive purposes to really have it all together and do this and do that. Because you never know what somebody's personal struggles are, it's impossible to make that evaluation of somebody. Even after you get to know somebody real well, even after you've been friends for years and years and years, most of us still have secrets. We still have issues that maybe we've never shared with anybody. So when you compare yourselves to them and say, oh, I wish I was like her, I wish I was like him, you're doing yourself a major injustice because you really don't know what being like him or her is going to be like. The saying, don't judge me until you walk in my shoes is profound. It's profound because it's the truth. There's no way in hell you know what I'm thinking. Even if you really, really, really know me good, you
That's
don't
true.
Know.
That's
not
true.
In my own. So to feel like, you know, oh, why can't I be like Shelley? She's got it so together, and she's got this, and you almost harbor a little bit of an anger towards Shelley because Shelley is doing it. When on the other hand, you really don't know how hard Shelley's worked to be who she is. I had an interesting conversation, actually it's almost a year now, in December of last year, with somebody very close to me, and a family member. And as a child, this family member was incredibly precocious and a handful. And she was, at face value, pretty self-centered, you know, and it didn't matter. I loved her regardless, and I realized she was struggling with some trials and tribulations. And we spent a long time together last December. And I said, you know, you've changed a lot over the years. And she said, I worked hard at it. And I looked at her and I thought, what does she mean by that? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, I spent the last 20 years reading self-help books. And I said,
oh,
wow. And she said, because how do you think I got past some of the things that happened to us when we were kids? I said, I didn't think they bothered you, to be honest with you. And I was being blatantly honest. Because I saw somebody who stood on their own, could be a real wise ass, somebody who said whatever they felt like saying, and if they didn't feel like saying anything, they didn't even come around. They didn't even acknowledge you. Right? So this was my judgment, as unfair and as much as I know better than that, that was my judgment. And after this conversation, of course, you know, first of all, I was ashamed of myself, number one, over something I can't do anything about now, certainly. But it did make me feel ashamed of myself and thought to myself, there I go again. You know, and I catch myself doing this, and I am very aware of doing this. So I try really hard not to. And even with me, it doesn't help all the time. You still jump to conclusions and assume that you know what's going on in somebody else's head when you don't. So the moral of that particular story is just that. You can only know what you really know. And the only person you will ever really, really know inside and out, darkest secrets, worst places, biggest nightmares, hardest challenges, biggest hurts, is you. Plain and simple, is you. There isn't anybody else. I have four children. I couldn't be any closer to them if I tied myself to them. I wish I knew what the hell was going on in their heads. I wish. Well, maybe I'd. But I always feel like if I knew, I could be a bigger help, you know. But I can't.
Yeah. That's right.
So when you're in...
Exactly. You're talking about your own family members, and half the time you can't peg what's going on inside their minds. So how could you possibly do that with a stranger or a casual acquaintance, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could have really, really stressful days, and I'd get into work. This is back in New York when I was in my 20s and 30s, and even down here. I mean, just because I'm okay with my life doesn't mean I don't have challenging days, but it's always been my thing. If somebody passed me and said, hey, how you doing? I don't grumble at them. I say, oh, you know, how's your day going? I say, oh, it's going fabulous. Meanwhile, I could have just had something challenging happen, you know, something very stressful, something even traumatic. I'm not just going to share it with everybody I meet that day. There are people like that, you know. Oh, I'm having a hell of a day. And then, boy, you don't even want to talk to them then, because it's more of a like, hi, how you doing? Not like, here, sit down and tell me what's going on with your life, you know. But because of that, because I always do that, and I always smile, people made the assumption, and I know this because a particular individual approached me at one time, people make the assumption that I have a happy-go-lucky life, and I had called this particular individual out on being aggressively nasty to somebody that was in my presence. And I called them out on it, and they said, well, I don't have a happy life like you do. Sometimes I get to work, and I just have to let the steam off. And I said, you don't even know me. And they said, well, you're always smiling. So then I told them what the past 2 weeks had been for me. This person almost fell over. They were in shock. They had no idea that I had any stresses in my life, that I had anything that wasn't going perfectly okay. And I have to admit that this particular woman, that this was back when I worked at Grumman, so I haven't kept in touch with her, but it made such an impression on her that she was like speechless. She was stunned to find out that my life wasn't fairy tale happy, but that I just chose to not burden other people with that, you know, and it really did change her. I saw a dramatic change in her, you know, and sometimes you just have to come to that realization. Like you said, you don't know what's going on in other people's heads. Don't assume that they have a fairy tale life, and don't assume that they're a jerk because you're one meeting in front of them, they're not acting very well. They could have just found out news that they're not settled with yet. We make so many snap judgments on people based on no information. And what else do we talk about on the show all the time? Get all the facts. And if you're not in a position to get all the facts, if it's not important enough because this was a chance meeting, then don't make the judgment if you don't have all the facts.
Well, and the other thing is when we're talking about what we're talking about today, being in search of that perfect person for you, that's still okay to do. You can still be in search of somebody who helps you be happy, who helps you live your life the way you want to live it, but not somebody you're going to put totally responsible for making sure it's good for you. That's the mistake.
What do you think about these places like eHarmony.com and all these places, and they say that they have such a high success rate with marriages and things like that. What do you think about, do you know anybody personally who's done that, who's actually found someone on one of?
I know probably half a dozen people that have utilized those sites. Not one of them has ever lasted with anybody. But I have a feeling about those places, too. I have a feeling that even though I'm gonna hope that they help some people, I mean, their advertisements all say that they help people. I mean, you know, but you can also read about eating yogurt makes you thin in 5 days. So what the hell do we know about that, you know? But I think that's a lazy, lazy thing to do. Let somebody else shop for your significant other. I could never bring myself to leave that kind of a decision up to somebody else, because I'll tell you the truth, I don't believe that when you meet the Mr. Right or Mrs. Right or Mr. Wrong and Mrs. Wrong, I don't believe when you meet them it has anything to do with the synchronicity of what you both believe in, because quite frankly, I've been married for 47 years, and he and I don't think a lot alike about almost anything. I am positive. I believe in positivity. My feelings get hurt easy. His feelings don't get hurt. He is really a negative kind of guy. It's always the glass is half empty instead of half full. We don't have any of those kind of built-in emotional things that are like each other. What we do have in common is that we like each other. What we do have in common is that we enjoy each other's company most of the time, even if it's only watching Jeopardy or something like that. And even at Jeopardy, it's a competition. It's something that we have fun doing. I can't tell you that and this I found out later in life, go to pick out new furniture for the first time ever. I'm looking at this, and he's looking at something totally different that I would have never known, even after, when did we get this last stuff, 40 years, I would have never said he would pick out that furniture after living with him for 40 years. Never in a million years. So
that's
I don't
wild.
Think, yeah, and I really don't think it's so much about that as it is being able to fit like a good puzzle.
Yeah,
and
even after 40 years, you're still learning things about him.
That's absolutely the truth. I also believe that when I feared, because he used to tell me when we were very young, he's 5 years older than I am, he used to say to me that by the time, I was 17 and he was 22 when we met. And we weren't going together, but we had met by then. By the time I was 18, we were going together. So mm-hmm. 5 years apart, and he would say to me, don't worry, I won't be around. The life I lead, I'm going to be dead by the time I'm 30. 30 came and went, and when we'd fight, I'd say, what about the promise you made me when you were 30? You know, and we'd get a big chunk of that. And so when he got sick, because he always said those things, when he got sick, I thought, he wouldn't want to do anything to make himself better. I really
yeah.
believe that. He'll never do this. I even probably said it to you, Shelley. He'll never do all these treatments. He'll never do all this. He did everything. And then when we came close to him being so sick, so bad, that I was, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and put my hand on his back, make sure he was breathing. That's how bad it was. And they said, we want you to do 3 more treatments that will last 9 weeks. 1 treatment every week of heavy-duty chemotherapy. We don't see any cancer, but we know about the dormant cells that go floating off that we often don't catch. So this is what we have designed to do now that we're at this point. So we came home. I looked at him and I said, do you want to quit? Because I thought he was going to say, hell yes, I'm not doing any more of this. And he said, why would I come this far and not finish it, Renee? And I was like, of course, I had a big sigh of relief because I thought I was going to be in for a fight, because once we chose this route, I knew we were going to have to see it to fruition. And nothing. He just said, why would I come this far and not finish it? So see, even after all these years, and Joey, my brother Joey, who had a major zest for life, was, he quit very early on and wanted it to be done. So you really no matter
people.
What you know, you still don't know them except for yourself, right?
See, I'm kind of on the fence with these dating sites, and the reason I say that is because I go to a lot of social events, I go to a lot of business events that have a social component to them, where I'm meeting large groups of people. And in the last 4 years, I've really only met one gentleman that I became very attracted to. He lives in New Jersey. We've not really possible for us to keep in touch. And there was definitely a click. The day that I met him, we spent the entire day together, and I could see that there was a commonality there. I could see that the relationship would have gone further, but he's in New Jersey and has a life and kids from his ex-wife up there, and I'm down here with my life, with my nieces and nephews, my sister. And so nothing happened because of it. So I'm looking at a place like these dating sites, and I have heard, you know, you can go on and look at their statistics. Hopefully they're not lying. If they're not lying, then their statistics are fairly impressive. It's like you put down there what your attributes are and what you're looking in an individual, you know, where you live and that kind of stuff, and then you find people that you can connect with. How am I going to know? There could be somebody living on the block over from me. I wouldn't even know that they're alive, you know. We're going to have to do some research on that, maybe do a follow-up talk, maybe ask people if they've gone that route and had any success. I really would like to know if what they say on these commercials has any validity to it, because if it is true, it's a nice way to meet people. It's a safer way to meet people. You kind of know a little bit about them before you even decide to, hey, let's get, you know, providing that nobody lies, and obviously there's no benefit to that. You know, I think they really stress that on the sites. I looked at the questionnaire once before, and they really stress not to lie because you're just wasting everybody's time and you're wasting your own money because you have to pay to enter it on here. You know, just tell the truth, and the person that wants to find you will find you, that type of thing. But I look at all the events that I've gone to and the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that I've met, and in 4 years I've met one individual that got my attention, and then that wasn't even something that could go forward because of the distance between us. So it would be interesting to see if, in fact, that is a solution. You know, we don't have communities anymore. We don't have people getting together in groups and introducing you to the guy down the block anymore. You can live right across from Mr. Wright, not even though he exists, or Miss Wright, or whatever, just because of
ventured.
How segmented society now.
Nothing, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I would not take a chance on it if I were you. I would just do it without tremendous expectations or believing somebody else
can. You have to
do
it that way. That way.
Right.
And one of the things I like what you said, and we didn't get into this, but I'm hoping that the woman that was supposed to be on the show will kind of expound on that, is that when you stop chasing after that perfect relationship, a lot of times, because that energy is very needy, the minute you stop chasing after that relationship, a lot of times, out of the blue, somebody just seems to come into your awareness and you click. And it's
yep.
almost like
That's right.
we kind of, when we calm ourselves down, when we get a little bit easier about life, many times, whether it's relationships or money or whatever, just starts coming our way and it's like, oh my God, where did that even come from? So
That's
there
right.
is.
That's right.
And, you know, when
you have to clear the air for things to come through. We are down to 2 minutes, and I want to read this real quick because it's my new venture, and it'll take at least 2 minutes to read it. Back in the mid-70s, Rachel Solomon went to Hippocrates in Boston and had such an amazing result that she started Hippocrates West in the San Diego, California area. Around that same time, a man by the name of Don Haugie also had interest in starting Hippocrates franchise in Union City, Michigan, called Hippocrates Midwest. The two locations continued using the name Hippocrates through the late 80s. It was at this time a meeting took place, and both Rachel and Don were asked to remove the Hippocrates name from their wellness centers. Rachel changed the name of her location to Optimum Health Institute, and Don also renamed his location to the Creative Health Institute, formerly Hippocrates Midwest. In 87, Moose and Jeanette Berganzi attended OHI and did the three-week program, and then they asked Moose to stay on as the general manager and as the maintenance manager. Michael Berganzi joined OHI in 1990 and through 1998, building their state-of-the-art greenhouse growing room. He then joined the Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach from 2001 to 2011. In the last few years, he's worked in Connecticut, he's worked in California, he travels all over and talks about wheatgrass, etc. In September of this year, he found out that the Creative Health Institute, the one in Michigan, had closed their doors and was for sale. He moved forward with some help, and they have purchased the Vibrant Health Institute, formerly the Creative Health Institute, in Hope City, Michigan. It will be called the Vibrant Health Institute. They've asked Maureen Rini Brewer, former GM of Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida from 2001 to 2011, to join the team. She remains one of Michael's closest, most trusted friends in the world today. Her compassionate nature will extend the intention of VHI to all of our guests. We will do a soft opening on January 18th of 2015. I will keep everybody posted. This is an affordable place. Yes, it's a long ways away. Yes, it's in cold weather. Some of us like cold weather. I look forward to keeping everybody up to date. I will be leaving December 1st to be there for a few weeks and get things off the ground floor. And while I'm there, we will do the radio show from there, so everybody will be kept up to date. I look forward to keeping everybody apprised of how things are going. So we are out of time, however, so thank you, everybody. God bless, and go out and have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow, and I have another guest that I'm working on getting to who sent a blog that just blew me away. So I'm excited to share that, and good wishes going out to Jamie, and hope she's well very, very soon. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rain. Great news. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All righty, everybody. Bye-bye.